Hello and welcome to the audio recording of Linux Voice Issue 1, April 2014. In this issue we have the best free software of 2014, we've got Ada Lovelace, we've got a tutorial on brewing beer with Raspberry Pi, and we've got some PGP tutorials as well. We've got a feature on Bitcoin and an interview with Florian Effenberger, chairman of the board of the Document Foundation. Plus, there's lots of other tutorials, reviews and features, and includes the welcome, the news opinion, our letters section and our user groups pages. Linux Voice is a Linux and free software magazine we successfully crowdfunded at the end of 2013. We give 50% of our profits back to the community and we release all of our content CC by SA within 9 months. If you like what you hear, then you can subscribe to Linux Voice at shop.linuxvoice.com. Page 3, Welcome, written by Graham Morrison. As I write this, it's a sunny Saturday morning and I'm sitting in the kitchen. The issue is 90% finished and we've got 8 hours until the PDFs need to be at the printers. We're used to crunch times like this. Stacy is adding the barcode to the cover. Andrew is working his magic. Mike is organizing our online store while Ben polishes the new website. It has been sometimes difficult, sometimes challenging, but always absolutely wonderful. We've created the magazine we always wanted to create, which we hope best represents the Linux and free software communities, which is why there's no better place to start than with a celebration of the very best that free software has to offer. For our cover feature, page 38, we chose 51 of the most awesome projects, but we could have chosen hundreds. The extent of open source penetration is staggering, and it's only going to become increasingly influential. The next few years will be the most exciting and revolutionary yet. All of us at Linux Voice can't wait to start making our own modest contribution. Page 6, News Analysis, written by Simon Phipps, President of the Open Source Initiative and Board Member of the Open Rights Group and of Open Source for America. The UK government has pressured ISPs into applying content filters to their customers' connections in the name of protecting children from unsuitable content. During 2014, ISPs will be approaching their customers and trying to persuade them to turn on filtering. But this is a mistaken approach arising from magical thinking. This thing should exist, so it must be possible. Content filters can't work for several reasons. For the most part, they can be avoided. Techniques such as using freely available VPN tools such as TunnelBear or switching to a non-ISP DNS enables users to effortlessly route around filters. As a consequence, relying on filters to do your parenting for you is foolish. Not only are they no substitute for parental oversight and care, they inculcate a careless reliance. They attempt to make objective a task which is subjective. For example, some people will regard websites promoting gay rights or giving information about abortion as unsuitable, while others will treat both topics as essential resources. Who gets to decide for us? The answer in most cases is nobody knows, since the ISPs are largely buying the blocking facility from third-party suppliers rather than building it themselves. Statements by filtering advocates take it as read that there's a consensus on what's bad and deceptive. The government proposes a whitelist of sites that should never be blocked, but this approach is flawed too, partly because their vision of which sites should be whitelisted only includes obvious, politically appealing cases like child welfare charities, omitting to mention harder cases such as mutual support groups, political comment, and satire, and completely ignoring the sort of free speech cases that are politically unappealing to the government. Indeed, a comprehensive whitelist is probably impossible because the internet, like space, is vastly, hugely, mind-bogglingly big. Even if a whitelist could work, most content providers won't know they should be on it, as blocking is invisible to them. Since the filter service is applied by ISPs to their customers' connections as part of the service, they rely on customers raising the alert on overblocking. As a web page provider, I have no way to know whether a given ISP is blocking my site, and when I eventually find out, there's no deterministic way to get it fixed, since neither the ISP nor their third-party provider have any duty to help me. In fact, the ISP's contract with their supplier may actually prohibit them from helping me. Most content providers might not even think to check anyway, even if they were to do so. Recently, the jQuery website was added to the block list for UK ISP Sky after the domain was mistakenly listed in the malware and phishing category. This unexpectedly broke many websites, since over three quarters of the top 10,000 websites use jQuery.com hosted components. A church website in Sheffield was blocked. My own company website was blocked. The robots that do the ranking can take pot shots at pretty much anything, and only the customers of the ISP involved could ever know. Meanwhile, parents are lulled into a false sense of security. The web is something of a mystery to many, and the assurance that parental control filters are keeping their children safe may well reduce the urgency of understanding how to supervise their children on the web. The correct path is sitting with children, assisting their use of technology, explaining how to decide who to trust, explaining when to ask for help or permission, applying discipline wisely. If it were possible to magically determine the suitability of any random website for any random web user, and if filtering could be made incircumventable without destroying the utility of the internet, maybe it would be okay to have censorship switch that parents could flip. But none of this is possible, and the facilities we're being sold will do more harm than good. You can help. Check out blocked.org.uk. That will help practically and also fuel the political battle. Page 12, your letters. First letter from Chris Sandals, the first taste of freedom. I remember when I finally ditched Windows. At last I'd broken free from the XP safety net, but it felt a little bit like OS freefall. Could I really manage without a corporate-backed product? Could I genuinely rely on a community of enthusiasts when something went wrong? Could I cope without the comfort and security of a familiar brand in a world where things weren't the same and sometimes broke? It didn't take long before my fears were dispelled, and I found that the gamble had paid off. Then I remembered all the headaches and issues I used to have with Windows, which led me to this decision in the first place. If any of this above sounds strangely familiar territory with your latest publishing venture, then fear not. You are still among friends, and we have made this journey together for the better. Graham replies, "Well said, Chris. The Linux and free software community may be incredibly passionate and argue a lot, but it's also the most helpful community I've ever known." Next letter, On a Roll by Richard. I have two computers, one of which is running Mint. I've installed every version since Maya, the LTS release, and have a separate home partition. It's been no problem at all. But with each install, I've had to re-download all the added programs from the repositories. Not an intuitive task for at least two people I've persuaded to try Linux. Last year, I came across SolidXK, ran the KDE version in VirtualBox, and was impressed by the way everything was updated every month. On behalf of novice users, would it be better to have a rolling release or stick with an 18-month-ish distribution? Mike replies, novices are better off with the clearly defined releases, I think. Rolling distros are good for living on the bleeding edge, but the major kernel X library updates can cause unexpected hard-to-fix breakages. Next letter, Excellent by Alvin Wilson. It would be great if your magazine could review a few more XFCE distributions. I noticed XFCE often gets overlooked in comparison to much bigger desktop environments such as GNOME and KDE. I was hoping you guys could do a roundup of several XFCE distributions and write a comparison for your readers. Looking forward to your magazine. I'll be getting my digital subscription soon. Ben replies, "Thanks for the feedback, Alvin. You're right that XFCE doesn't get as much attention as the big desktops, but the times are a-changing. We've seen a large bunch of former GNOME fans move to XFCE after GNOME 3's redesign, and it provides a lot of what GNOME 2 used to be, a familiar-looking, reliable GTK-based desktop environment. We'll keep an eye on XFCE-based distros. Zubuntu is the most notable, but we always like to hear of others. If you discover one, let us know." Next letter, Banging Tunes by Owain Clark. I wonder if readers would like to share their favourite songs. I love anything by GNU Kids on the Block, and we should all be grateful for the contribution that Colonel Parker made to modern music, but I think my all-time bests are Cliff Richard's She's a Dev/Null Woman, Buddy Holly's Wake Up Little Suze, and Paul Young's Wherever I Lay My Red Hat, of course, and Phil Collins' breathtakingly unannoying Sue Pseudo. In fact, I like any CD. Andrew says, all groovy beats, but let's not forget the classic, Stand By Your Man page. If anyone can somehow fit Slackware into a song title, let us know. Next letter, The Code Ahead by Bill Pallone. Just a note on Linux and FOSS in general. I made the big move about 5 or 6 years ago. Since that time, I started coding again and have really started to enjoy computing again. In short, computing is fun again. I hope that you continue with coding tutorials in Linux Voice. They're great for those who have an itch, but don't know where to start. For those of us who have a favorite language, but don't like a change. We get to see how other language is structured, which means we can better read sources from other languages. Do keep up the good work. We've all seen you in the past. Mike says, thanks for the feedback, Bill. Hopefully you'll be glad to see a regular coding section in the Linux Voice. And in next month's cover feature, we'll have programming projects for newbies as well as experienced hackers. I totally agree that coding makes computing fun. And it's great that the Raspberry Pi is encouraging kids in schools to learn the art. Apart from helping kids out in the job market, programming skills help language, maths and logical thought. One of my next projects is to port MicOS to the Pi. But given that it's all written in x86 assembly language and the Pi works on an ARM chip, that may be a truly epic job. Next letter, Distro Hunt by Sophie Struve. I've been using Ubuntu for quite some time, installed 13.10 and got quite disappointed, so I had to look for a new distro. After a little searching the net, I found a young KDE distro based on Debian, inspired by Mint Debian Edition. It does monthly updates, semi-rolling releases, looks great, has the latest and greatest, comes with Firefox, Thunderbirds, LibreOffice. I think I found a new home. Solid XK. Mike says, wow, that's two mentions of this distro in the same letters page. Solid XK's relatively conservative approach to the rolling release model, bundled monthly updates, may help to avoid the occasional breakage that can affect other rolling distros. If anyone else wants to check it out, the website is www.solidxk.com. Next letter, Satnav Size by Dan Konovalov. Linux Voice, I'd like to express my absolute disgust that your magazine isn't called GNU/Linux Voice. I will be writing to my MP about this very... only joking. Good luck with the magazine, and I hope you give credit to the GNU project when appropriate, even though I think the naming debate is rather overblown. Andrew says, rest assured, the GNU/Linux FAQ on www.gnu.org is my bedtime reading material. One day I'll get to the end. In all seriousness, GNU, Richard Stallman and the Free Software Foundation have contributed hugely to the operating system we use and love today. Big thanks to them. But there must be a prettier name. And Linux isn't it. Next letter, GNU's Talking by Ray Woods. TomToms are very annoying. They may use a Linux kernel to work, but to update them you require a Windows or Apple computer. Their update program just will not work with the Linux box, even when running with Wine. Plugging the sat-nav into a USB socket on my Linux Mint computer allows me to see inside the TomTom just as if it were an attached disk. This is all fine and dandy, but unless you can download the appropriate files for the TomTom and then know what to do with them, it all becomes a bit pointless. Do you have any ideas? Is there such a thing as a Linux-friendly sat-nav on the market in the UK? And good luck with the new magazine. I'm really looking forward to the first and subsequent editions falling through my letters box. Mike says, I'm not au fait with sat-nav systems as I navigate by the moon, the stars, and our ancestral memory, but maybe one of our readers can write in with a recommendation. Or you could perhaps add your name to the TomTom Linux support petition online. That's www.petitiononline.com/TomLinux. And yes, there is something very silly about a device that runs Linux, but don't actually integrate well with the desktop Linux installations. It seems like manufacturers are missing an opportunity for a big, easy win. Next letter is Happy Hacking by Andres. It's nice to show us some coding rules and some languages, but what I really want to learn is how to help out existing projects. Could the following be done? Review a piece of software and find a bug or propose a new feature. Go through the particular case for raising the issues, Launchpad, Gatorius, Bugzilla, find the bit of code that needs changing, patch it or propose how to solve it, e.g. the for loop does not take into account iteration from zero and causes it to ignore the first item of a list, without actually writing any code, or maybe correct a translation from German in MicOS, or go over push, pull, SVN, CVS, Git or Bazaar, or improve documentation, or take the constructive criticism nicely, even if Linus School of Thought lead maintainer calls you a back birth. Anyway, Please show us how to be outstanding citizens of the free software world. Mike says, this is a good idea. At FOSDEM, I spoke to Wolfram Sang, a kernel hacker who gave a talk on improving the kernel without having to contribute any code. I'd like to write an article about this in an upcoming issue. There's also a really niggling LibreOffice bug that I plan to fix. Maybe I'll document that, if I don't get totally lost in a huge code base. Next letter, Maths Time by Tirab. I was wondering, since as far as I understand this publication is aimed more at the intermediate user level, if you could perhaps do an extensive tutorial series on algorithms, kind of like a comprehensive guide from the basics to advanced subjects. Algorithms are one of the most important and most fun parts of being able to program a computer, yet other publications seem to largely ignore them or devote a couple of pages to them. Graham says, wow, it's like you reading our minds. Algorithms are a fascinating subject, so turn to page 100 for a look at Euclid's. Another letter, What Cloud by Andrew Walker. I've recently bought a HP microserver as my concern for privacy after the Snowden stuff came to light just kept growing. My dilemma now is which self-hosted cloud storage solution to go with. The candidates are SparkleShare, cFile, Pidio, Seekony or Git Annex Assistant. I'm struggling to decide and thought you may be able to do a review. It has to be open source and needs to run on Arch. Ideally, I would like to have the files stored in their normal manner so that I can put the drives in another PC and access them should my server die, i.e. not encrypted or some special format. Versioning would also be a bonus, but not essential. Ben says, great idea, Andrew. We'll try to include it in an upcoming issue. Final letter, Oh Vienna by Martin Domansky. Mike, I wonder what you are doing in Vienna. Are you trying to change the civil service to Linux like it was done in Munich? Mike says, yes, that's right, honest, nothing to do with the beer and schnitzel or anything like that. Incidentally, Graham and I went to Munich to interview the people behind the city's Linux transition, so keep an eye out for the full report next month. And yes, we did drink Weissbier. Page 16, Lugs on Tor. Blackpool Lug by Les Pounder. Blackpool Lug meets once a week, making it a rarity as most groups meet monthly. The venue is the business premises of Mike Hewitt, the Lug's organiser, and just happens to be a PC recycling centre full of old kit that they can use for projects. A typical Lug meeting involves a brioche and coffee, oh, and quite a lot of hacking and making. Past projects include repurposing thin client computers using Puppy Linux for Og Camp signage, and a step-by-step video guide on how to dismantle and rebuild a desktop computer. Blackpool Lug recently became a makerspace, growing with the group's interest in maker culture and hardware hacking. It now has a lot of great facilities such as a soldering room with an extractor fan and data sheets for all the different microcontrollers that they tinker with. They especially enjoy hacking with Arduinos, and now everyone has an Arduino-compatible device called the Shrimp, which is a bare-bones Arduino, but fully compatible with the Uno range of Arduinos. Every week, there will be three or four different projects on the go. For example, the youngest member, Kieran, has been learning Python to augment his computing lessons at school. His skill has grown each week, and now he is readily creating his own programs, such as a lottery number generator. Blackpool Lug's most senior member, Elizabeth, has been learning Grub and how to configure it to maximize her workflow, while Mike and Donald, our two electrical experts, have recently repaired an old LCD TV to full working order, enabling the Lug to have a purpose-built Google Hangout device on the main wall. Members of Blackpool Lug have done many great things, both inside and outside their meetings. They have travelled the UK providing logistical and technical support for many high-profile events. You might know of one, the mighty Og Camp Unconference. Blackpool Lug have supported Og Camp since 2011 and can be found working in the crew along with the other magnificent volunteers. Linux is a community, and what makes the Lug so special are the people, who all have a shared interest in Linux, and that bonds us together. But the friendships created are more than this. I'd like to say thanks to Mike Hewitt for keeping the Lug open over the years and giving us a great home. If you have yet to find your local UK Linux user group, head over to lug.org.uk and sign up to your nearest meetings mailing list. Drop them a line and say hi. If there isn't a Lug in your area, why don't you start one? For a venue, why not try a coffee shop or a local pub? Start small and build upon each success. That's what Blackpool Lug has done. Bradford Lug by John McClear and Shi Husseini. Shi Husseini got in touch with us from Bradford Lug to tell us about what they're up to in the land of dark satanic mills. My husband and I have been working on Swanky Paint, a deluxe paint clone, old school pixel editor used in the games industry since the 80s, targeting the Raspberry Pi natively, as well as Linux, Android, etc. But the Pi is our minimum spec. So far we have basic editing and animated GIF support, so it's actually usable. John McClear wrote to tell us about a Cryotic Raspberry Pi XBMC project. I've been hacking on the Pi NXP Explorer so I can use an NFC ring to pause play VLC and XBMC videos by touching a panel under the TV. Next step is so each person in my house can have a profile GUID stored on their ring, and when they touch the TV, it plays from a list of TV shows recommended streamed for them. We'll admit that we didn't really understand this until we realized the NFC ring is a project that John funded on Kickstarter, raining in almost £250,000 to develop a ring that can be worn on your finger and which transmits data to nearby devices. Page 18. FOSDEM 2014 by Mike Saunders and Andrew Gregory. Geeks work hard, but they play hard as well. While the vast majority of Linux and free software development takes place over the internet, real-life meetups are hugely important as well. One of the biggest such European meetups is FOSDEM, which takes place every February in Brussels. We went along to see the action and we didn't come away disappointed. Scattered across various halls of the ULB Solvsbosch campus, FOSDEM was packed with talks from developers working on projects across the whole free software spectrum. Desktop applications, network security, games, and open hardware. Hackers could watch presentations about new technologies before exchanging ideas with other programmers and doing some on-the-spot coding. Michael Morozek introduced the DragonBox Pyra, the follow-up to the Pandora open-source handheld games console, while Daniel Naber explained how Language Tool, a free software proofreading program, has been used to find over a million style and grammar errors in the English language Wikipedia. Open Mandriva and Rosa teamed up to talk about porting their distros to ARM devices, and Laurent Eschenauer showed off NodeCopter, a drone that's programmable with JavaScript. We met a bunch of awesome people on our travels. Peter Hitchens, anti-software patent campaigner and author of the Zero MQ Distributed Computing Framework, kindly gave us a copy of his latest book, Culture and Empire: Digital Revolution, see page 28. Red Hat evangelist and transnational citizen Jan Wildeboer told us how he disabled the RFID chip in his passport using his microwave. He's a fascinating guy, and we hope to get an interview with him in the next few months. We also spoke to Wolfram Sang, a kernel hacker who is trying to get non-coders involved in kernel development. How can you improve the kernel if you don't know any C? Well, Wolfram explained how it's fairly easy to add new device IDs to drivers, so if you buy a webcam and it doesn't work out of the box in Linux, you may be able to add its device ID to an existing driver to make it function. We'll have more from Wolfram in Linux Voice soon, so stay tuned. But our favourite part of FOSDEM 2014 was the stands. Most computer shows tend to have boring stands with gel-haired sales drones parroting the latest blurb about their products, but it's totally different at FOSDEM. Small projects are well represented, and the people at the stands are the geeks who work on them. Anyone could walk up and chat to developers of the Enlightenment Window Manager, for example, and the same goes for CentOS, LibreOffice and OpenSUSE. The OpenSUSE team showed us their VM-based automated distro testing system that sends keyboard and mouse input to the VM window to perform automatic installations, while the Fedora stand wooed everyone with an awesome 3D printer creating Fedora badges. Also present were the Free Software Foundation Europe, the Mozilla Foundation and the Apache OpenOffice project. Beer was tasty and plentiful. The Wi-Fi network did a good job as well, given that there were several thousand geeks connected to it at any one time. It was great to meet so many Linux Voice fans as well. Your support and enthusiasm is amazing. So, thanks to everyone who attended and showed off their awesome work, and see you next year.